broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
We believe it's illegal and it was unlawful for the coach to hit.
Because I felt that some people were being demonized.
The United States has always considered waterboarding torture, except during the Bush administration.
You have been tweeting me.
She's definitely a tramp.
Welcome to world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast with a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch, and through the looking glass every night, going places other talk shows wish they could but can't. We're online at philhendryshow.com. You can watch a live streaming video of our show as you listen to live streaming audio of our show. And we've got some announcements to make over the next few days that will add to your enjoyment online, and we will make those announcements. But if there is a radio show that you should watch as well as listen to, because it's actually interesting to look at, it's ours. So check it out, philhendryshow.com, for a backstage pass. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Coming up in a moment, we've got Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier. We're going to talk about the Harry Potter opening in London last night. And I got to tell you that there are rumors abounding about what happened. Something went down at the Harry Potter debut last night, and it was some kind of a problem. If the actors are getting tired of doing this movie, or the the studio's getting tired of making money, I don't know what it is. But there was some kind of act that subverted a little bit of this premiere. We're going to talk with Doug Danger about that coming up. Amazon.com gives the boot to a pedophile book. Is it censorship? And a dad sues his kid's school for reading a children's book about slavery. But the children's book about slavery was for Black History Month, and the father and the child are both black. Across the country, veterans were honored by a thankful country. We'll get into some of the celebrations. Doug Danger, Margaret Gray with us. 877-876-PHIL. Affiliate Spotlight tonight falls at WHNZ, 1250 a.m. in Tampa, and CFRB, 1010 a.m. in Toronto, Canada, home of my cousins Fran, Paul, and Elaine. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Now, the story from London, England, beginning of the end at the Harry Potter premiere, beginning of the end at the London premiere, anyway, of Harry Potter. It was a fitting that the premiere for the darkest movie in the Harry Potter series would take place on a bone-chilling, rainy night. And then it goes on, Doug, to talk about how people were in line saying, is this the beginning of the end?
Well, I don't know, Phil, if one of the actors, Daniel Radcliffe, heard that conversation or was a part of trying to start this conversation. But Daniel Radcliffe last night, the word is, and this is rumor right now, I've been on the phone for the last 5 hours talking to my contacts in London. I was supposed to be in London for the premiere, but I've decided that I will wait, go to New York for the premiere in New York of this film, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Part 1.
What did you hear happen?
What I heard happened, and I want to say this as delicately as I can, because I understand these young actors. They are very young people that work in this movie. There's a lot of very veteran people that work in this movie. There's a lot of people who are longtime professionals. But these young actors are, after all, artists, and they want to do quality work. And when you are doing movies, and I want to start off by saying, as a gay man, as a gay journalist, but I am a gay man, and I have been out for the last 3 weeks, and I know the hard road that some people have to walk to make their art something they're proud of. And as a gay man, as a gay journalist, and there's been an awful lot of talk lately about gay bullying, and I'm like, I couldn't be closer to the epicenter of the gay bullying topic than to be talking about Daniel Radcliffe feeling bullied, really, by the studio into doing this ridiculous series of movies, Phil.
When you say ridiculous series of movies, this is a fantasy film.
It is a fantasy film, and it's not unlike J.R.R. Tolkien, but these are young actors that want to do serious drama. They want to do quality material. They're tired of working in these movies that are nothing more than an opportunity to sell a lunch bucket. They're nothing more than an opportunity to sell a doll or some Christmas merchandise. And so what Daniel Radcliffe did last night, if what I'm hearing is true, was a statement of frustration
And for people who don't know who Daniel Radcliffe is, could you tell us?
Daniel Radcliffe is the main, he's the actor who plays the main character in the film Harry Potter. Daniel Radcliffe has been in every single one of the Harry Potter movies. He was selected in a casting effort on the part of the producers and has been an outstanding young actor and is a great actor and is getting on in years. He doesn't want to sell lunch buckets anymore. He doesn't want to sell dolls. He doesn't want to sell headbands. He doesn't want to sell bumper stickers anymore. He wants to do good work, Phil.
All right. We're talking with Doug Danger about the debut of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1. Now, we have to get into what you heard he did last night, because it's very extreme. I think it sounds to me like the kid's having a nervous breakdown.
I don't think so.
You don't?
No, I don't. I think it was a statement of protest. And
well, what did he do?
He exposed himself. He exposed himself.
You think that in front of young fans?
I think that he had to do something to say to.
Now, do you know this for a fact?
The rumor that I'm hearing is that he was so frustrated. Let me read for you, and I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, Bill, so I look at these things very, very carefully. I don't go off like most journalists who, to be perfectly honest with you, most of the journalists I know will just hear something and say, oh, okay, let me report that because I've got to go to dinner, I've got to get home to my wife, I've got to get home to my dog and my kids and everything like that. As a gay man, as a gay journalist, I don't let things go that easy. I look into them as carefully as I can. I have not been able to absolutely nail down that he did this act of exposing himself, but I do know, and the quote is, after 10 years of this, it's incredible after 10 years of this. Meaning that...
After 10 years of this what?
After 10 years of this, I think what he was saying was, I am so sick to death of after 10 long years of this ridiculous franchise of Harry Potter this and Harry Potter that, and I'm never going to be the actor that I wanted to be. I'm never going to be able to do the great quality work that other actors do, because I'm going to be tied to the Harry Potter franchise, and it's been going on for 10 years and I'm sick of it. And that's when he is alleged to have done this.
Well, what he did was, if what you're saying is true, was obscene, was vile, cannot be forgiven. I don't care what he's protesting. Excuse me. Given the age of the young people that were there,
Well, clearly you're not looking at it as an artist. I think you sound like one of these PTA mothers. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, so I understand. But I got to tell you, I'm gay, and this gay bullying thing that's going on, this is exactly what Daniel Radcliffe is talking about.
How is he talking about gay bullying by, if what he did is true, exposing himself in front of this Harry Potter crowd and saying, after 10 years of this, I'm sick of it?
Because he, in his way, has been bullied by the studio.
Bullied by the studio to what? Sign a contract that's made this kid more money than he probably doesn't have to work again.
You don't know that. You don't know that at all. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I don't know that. And if anybody was going to know that, I'd know it because I'm gay. But I don't. What I do know is that this is a classic protest against the gay bullying of a studio, that a young man who wants to just be free of doing a series of movies that are nothing more than an opportunity to sell merchandise, and he's bullied into continuing to play this role as Harry Potter, and I'm gay, is gay bullying at its worst. And I think he said, take a look at this, shake hands with this, and walked inside.
Well, if he did that, it is a vile and crude thing to do, and it is no form of protest.
You're very judgmental. You don't understand artists.
Maybe I don't understand artists. I'm going to tell you something, though. I do understand protest. There's certain protests that I do not countenance. I don't care what the meaning is. I don't countenance the burning of the American flag. I think it's a sloppy protest. And I certainly wouldn't countenance some guy standing there and pulling his penis out in front of young people. But we don't know for a fact if this happened.
I've been on the phone all day trying to nail this down. Phil, I have to tell you something, and this is something that you're not going to like, and I know the listeners aren't going to like this, but the real culprit in this are the fans. The Harry Potter fans are complicit in this bullying. They have gay bullied Daniel Radcliffe. They've gay bullied Emma Watson. They've gay bullied Helena Bonham Carter. They've gay bullied these actors because they got to have their lunch bucket. They got to have their Harry Potter. They got to have their book. They got to have this. They got to have that. These actors are caught, and they are caught in this downward spiral of being bullied the way any common gay would be. And as a gay man and as a gay journalist, I can see this. And so what did Daniel Radcliffe do last night? If he did what I am told he did, he stood there and exposed himself.
No, I understand what he did, and I'm still telling you, that is a crude and a very inefficient form of protest.
Well, what are these young actors supposed to do with the gay bullying? And
you're calling this gay bullying, man.
I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, Bill. I've been working in this business for 25 years. I was a copy boy over at the LA Times.
It doesn't make any difference to me, Doug, whether you're a gay man and a gay journalist, because you can't tell me how this is gay bullying Daniel Radcliffe being forced to do Harry Potter movies.
Yes, I can.
Well, if you have...
If you would listen to me... And I'm asking you, Phil, to listen to me. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. Daniel Radcliffe has been pushed around by the studio. Get into that Harry Potter movie. Play Harry Potter. We got more lunch boxes to sell. Play Harry Potter. We've got more action figures to sell. Play Harry Potter. And what he did was he exposed himself because he's had enough of this gay bullying. And can we blame him?
Is he gay?
Who?
Is Daniel Radcliffe gay?
It doesn't make any difference if he's gay. This is a symbolic protest by this young man, if in fact he did expose himself. And as a gay man, as a gay journalist, I'm trying to tell you what's going on here. Because we've got kids that are being bullied in our schools here in America, yes. But over in England, there are young actors who are being bullied by the studio to play these ridiculous characters in these Harry Potter movies. Be happy with the money they make on the merchandising end. They ship the whole cast to the Universal Studios in Florida to pimp out those Harry Potter rides. They gay bully them to promote the roller coaster and the mugs and the t-shirts. I'm telling you, if Daniel Radcliffe hadn't pulled his penis out last night, he would have killed himself.
If he did that.
If he did that, yes.
877-876-PHIL. Last night at the Harry Potter debut in London, Doug is telling me the rumor is Daniel Radcliffe exposed himself as a form of protest because the actors are tired of playing in these films that are nothing more than merchandising opportunities, nothing more than large promotional vehicles for Disney rides, for action figures, and for lunch boxes. And Daniel Radcliffe... This ridiculous form of protest that I think is very, very crude. 877-876-PHIL is our number, 877-876-PHIL. Later on, Margaret Gray will talk with us about dogs and where they're allowed in her neighborhood, where they should be allowed in any neighborhood. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Hold on for just a second, Doug. We're back with Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier talking about the Harry Potter debut in London last night, where it, according to Doug's sources, Daniel Radcliffe exposed himself to the crowd. Is that correct?
That is what I heard, was that the young man turned and had said something about, I'm sick to death at 10 years of you, and exposed himself. Now, to be perfectly honest, Bill.
No, I understand. You are defending him. You're saying that this kid is it has been pushed to this.
He has been pushed to this, not just by the studio, but by the audience, Bill. It's very. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, so I look at things. I don't just stop and I don't just write the story and then turn it in and then go off and have dinner. Man, I make sure everything I write is true. And I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I'll tell you right now. The audience of the Harry Potter movies drove this kid to expose himself last night. They drove this kid and the other actors, this poor kid, Rupert Gint, who is a ginger kid, he's got the red hair, So he gets picked on because of that. Radcliffe gets gay bullied. And
Daniel Radcliffe is not gay.
No, he's not gay, but the actors in total are being treated as if they're gay. And that's what I mean about gay bullying.
And so the response of him exposing himself to the crowd, you forgive that? I would never forgive something like that.
No, are you under that kind of pressure? Do you understand what it is to be a young person who is being pushed around and forced to act in a movie that is simply a merchandising vehicle?
There are other young actors that would give their right arm to have the opportunity.
It's very easy for you to say, Phil. You don't know what the pressure is like. You don't know, and you and your audience, and I say this, Phil, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, I say this with the greatest respect, but you and your audience don't understand what it is to stand there and get pushed around by these directors and these.
All right, hold on. 877-876-PHIL is the number on the Phil Henry Show. Doug Denger with us talking about the Harry Potter debut last night in London. Here is Susan in Laredo, Texas. Susan, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hi, sir. You know, as yes. a gay community and part of your audience, I respect the fact that you are keeping this conversation in tune, but it's a little hard for your audience to hear about Daniel Radcliffe when every 2 seconds we have to hear from your journalist. I'm gay. I'm a journalist. Get over yourself. We're talking about Daniel Radcliffe.
It's important. It's important to the story. It's important to the story.
It is not. It has nothing to do with you being a gay journalist every 2 seconds. We're talking about Daniel Radcliffe if he did in fact expose himself. My nephew is Harry Potter crazy. Dick Tracy has fans. Batman has fans. It will go out. It will fade when he gets older. What he did was implorable. He should not have done that with his audience.
Well, we don't know, Susan. Susan, let me interrupt you. We don't know for a fact if that happened. Doug says his.
Well, Phil, I'm hearing that.
You may be hearing it, but we have not yet confirmed that. Okay. You're saying that Daniel Radcliffe exposed himself because he's sick to death of his fans.
Right now, I can tell you that Daniel Radcliffe, with all due respect to Susan, Daniel Radcliffe is probably thinking of people like Susan when he said, "I can't take it anymore." You know, and this is why I say I'm gay. This is why I say I'm gay. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist because I get it about a kid who gets pushed around, has his face stuck on a lunch bucket. With all due respect to your child, Susan, your son drove Daniel Radcliffe to pull it out last night.
First of all, I guess you missed the point because I didn't repeat myself every 2 seconds. I'm gay and my nephew, okay?
I'm a gay man and a gay journalist.
I take my nephew to the movies, no matter what movie it is, and there is an Harry Potter, a Dick Tracy, a Batman, a Spider-Man audience. What he did in front of the children, if he did it, has nothing to do with you being gay and you being a journalist every 2 seconds.
As a gay man and as a gay journalist, I understand how in many ways the cast of Harry Potter has been gay bullied.
We've all been bullied, no matter if we're gay or not. We've all been bullied in one aspect or another. It does not mean that we take out our privates in front of children. It's called dignity and self-respect.
I have to tell you, this is just my opinion, but if he pulled it out and waved it around, I think it was a good form of protest, because I think he's saying, you know, I gave up 10 years of my life for you people. Shake hands with this.
Wait a minute, man. What 10 years of his life did he give up? He was in one of the most popular film franchises in history. He has his name plastered. He has the opportunity that many actors would want to have.
Phil. I'm sorry, but you and your audience, with all due respect, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. I work in Hollywood. I know how the. What's that?
Here we go again. Every 2 seconds, you got to put your little pipe in there. Listen.
You know, it's interesting. You say you're gay, and you can't stand me being gay. How does that work?
It's not that she can't stand you being gay. It's that she doesn't want to keep hearing you talk about it.
I don't know how that works.
I'm almost 60 years old. I served my country. So do I go because now this thing with the military about this and that? Do I go every 2 seconds and say, oh, by the way, I'm gay. I served my country. No, it's called... You live a normal life.
I don't know if that really...
You don't justify what Daniel Radcliffe did by saying he did it because he was gay bully. The gay has nothing to do with it. If he did it,
exactly, that's what I'm saying.
No, I know that. I know he's not gay, but I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and what I see in it is a gay...
All right, look, thank you very much, Susan. We'll be back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show with Doug Danger. As we talk about the London premiere of Harry Potter last night, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.
I'm gay.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, the audio, too.
All right, Doug Danger joins me from the Orange County Courier as we talk about last night's premiere of Harry Potter in London. The rumor was that Daniel Radcliffe had some kind of an angry protest exposing himself to the crowd. Was he drunk?
I don't know. He might have had a couple drinks.
But we don't know if this happened. We're just hearing that he's frustrated with having played Harry Potter, frustrated with having been in a movie that is a merchandising effort, as you call it, frustrated with being gay bullied, even though the young man is not gay. But
as a gay man, as a gay journalist, though, I recognize these young performers, these actors, who are gay bullied by the studios into being these little merchandising figures, and the audience. That's the I've been trying to make this point, and you keep interrupting me, and with all due respect, Phil, and your audience keeps interrupting me. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I'm telling you that the audience of the Harry Potter movies, they're the ones that caused Daniel Radcliffe, if he exposed himself, they're the ones that unzipped his pants, if you want to...
That's ridiculous, okay? First of all, we don't know whether he did this or not.
No, we do not know that. You're right. But I want to play for you the audio of Daniel Radcliffe, and the studio and J.K. Rowling are holding these poor kids hostage. They can write another Harry Potter movie and force them to come back. At what point does Daniel Radcliffe get his life back? You know, Daniel Radcliffe last night with that deft move... With one hand the zipper, the other hand, he basically was saying, I want my life back. Now, here is the audio of Daniel Radcliffe last night, not seconds before he is alleged to have exposed himself.
You know, 10 years is a long time to spend with one character, so I'm kind of ready to move on, you know.
Well, what is that? It
that's the you can hear him say 10 years is a long time. I'm ready to move on. You can hear the frustration building.
Did you? That sounded like an edit.
There was some extraneous noise that I cut out of it, but that's what he said.
So he had no words of praise for the film. He had nothing good to say about the movie. He's at the premiere. The studio is sponsoring this thing. They're paying for him to be there.
He had nothing. Look, you know, you don't like me to say it, but I'm going to say it because I'm gay. I can't deny. You want me to lie about being gay? Is that what you want me to do?
Doug, I haven't asked you to do anything.
Well, your audience, in addition to asking Daniel Radcliffe to be held hostage and gay bullied by a studio, they don't want to know I'm gay.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, as we talked to Doug Danger about the Harry Potter movie last night, if Daniel Radcliffe did say anything or do anything in protest, it's because he's been held hostage by the studio. He wants his life back, and so that means he gets to pull his penis out. It's unbelievable. Here is Chris in Salem, North Carolina. Go ahead, Chris. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Doug Danger.
Doug, I got a couple of questions for you. One of them is, how reliable is your source?
It's iffy at best. It's iffy. These are people, I share a pool of sources with British papers, and, you know, they can print anything they want over there, so they don't vet as well as we do.
Okay, the other question is, how far did you dig into all of this? The reason why I'm asking this is just a few months back, all three of the main actors were interviewed, and they were all three said that it's coming to an end. Are you sure that that little piece that you played... Are you sure that that little bit of information that you played... He wasn't saying that he was sad after 10 years that it was over.
you can hear it. You want me to play it again? I'll play it for you. I mean, first of all, when you're sitting down for an interview and there is a studio thug hanging over you and listening to every word, you can't say what you want to say. You have to do what they tell you to do. They put a finger in your chest and they say, you go out there and make this movie sound like it's the greatest thing since Gone with the Wind. And that's what you got to do. Now, what happened last night was that Daniel Radcliffe had had enough of that. He'd had enough of these studio thugs sticking a finger in his face and saying, going out there and hop up and down for the patrons. You know, he got tired.
For somebody who's a role model, role model now, highly doubt that he did that.
We do know that people under pressure do a lot of things that we wish they didn't. We do know that people have emotional highs and emotional lows. I think Daniel Radcliffe is a great young actor. I think he should have opportunity to do other things. And I think he said, I'll play it for you one more time. He said he's sick and tired of the audience, especially, telling him what to do.
You know, 10 years is a long time to spend with one character.
Right there. You hear how he is frustrated.
He did not say he was sick and tired. He said
play it,
10 years.
Play it again. Play it again. I'd like to hear it again, Doug. Can you play it again?
What do you want to hear it again?
I want to hear it again so we can listen and know. I mean, I want to know what the man said.
I will re-rack it. Hold on. All right, this is Daniel Radcliffe last evening in London.
You know, 10 years is a long time to spend with one character, so I mean, I'm kind of ready to move on.
I'm sorry, but you can basically hear what he's saying. I am tired of it. I want to move on, and I want my life back. And
okay,
that is allegedly, that's when he... Allegedly, that's when he unzipped and did what he did.
What was your question again, Chris?
Why did you stop it at that point? Why don't you play the whole tape?
Play the whole tape.
You essentially heard what...
No, play the whole tape, Doug, because I'm getting the feeling that you're editing.
I'm not editing anything.
Play the whole tape.
You know, 10 years is a long time to spend with one character, so I'm kind of ready to move on, you know.
There you go. He's ready to get out. And why? Why, after 10 years of making nothing but millions and millions of dollars, is he ready to get out? I want out of this. Why? Because he's sick and tired of the studio making him, bullying him.
Okay, so I don't understand why somebody would say that they are sad that this is ending and then turn around and quote-unquote supposedly say that they are sick and tired of it. Why would they contradict themselves?
I don't understand. Because the studio told them to say one thing, and last night he didn't care. He pulled out his penis and then said... He pulled out his penis and then...
You know, 10 years is a long time to spend with one character, so I'm kind of ready to move on, you know.
You mean he did it before that?
He did it before that, yeah. And he's ready,
he's ready to advance his career.
Exactly, because he sure ain't doing it with Harry Potter.
All right, Chris, thanks for your call. 877-876-PHIL. Let's move on to another Chris in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Go ahead, Chris, you're on with Doug Danger.
Yes, sir. Quite frankly, I understand that your news journalist here is gay and that he's a journalist. We all understand that, sir. We respect the fact of your views and what you like to do and that you're a journalist. We understand that. We quite frankly don't need to hear it no more. We're here to discuss an issue that
I'm trying to make the point that as a gay man and as a gay journalist, I understand how this kid might want to say, you all can just take it and park it, that's all.
But yes, sir, you got to understand this, sir. There's a thing called overkill, and when you consistently repeat something over and over, it takes away from the main issue here. The main issue here is
I didn't understand what he said. Did he say Gerber kill?
No, he said overkill. Oh. Overkill.
I said overkill. If somebody were to run over a deer and then back up and run it over again, that's what you're doing by saying that you're gay every 5 seconds, sir. The issue here that we're trying to discuss.
What if the deer isn't dead? What if you need to back over the deer because it's not dead?
Well, that's the point of being overkill, sir. But let's go back to the topic at hand.
If it's not dead, you have to run it over again to kill it. That's not overkill. That's killing it.
So what are you saying? Okay. You're saying that people aren't getting that you're gay?
I need people to understand that as a gay man and as a gay journalist, okay?
Yes, sir. You've repeatedly made that clear. And it's almost as clear as a crystal, sir. That's how clear you have made the fact that you are gay and that you are a journalist. Now,
I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. And that's
We understand that. We forgot the man part. We understand that.
All right.
Okay.
Here's the thing.
Now,
when you say you got to back over a deer again, maybe it's not dead.
Doug, don't belabor that. I understand what the gentleman was trying to say. If the deer is dead, you don't have to kill it again.
But if it's not dead?
If it's not dead, then I guess what you really should have done is taken out a gun and shot it. Go ahead, please, Chris.
Okay. Now, man, the issue here is Daniel Radcliffe possibly pulling out his little British whatever and possibly showing it to a group of people. Until there's actually confirmed evidence, it's okay to discuss it. But look, you're bringing up that the kid might be frustrated. The kid, you might have misjudged his accent. Maybe you don't understand the fact that the British always sound depressed when they talk. My family's British, and when we start going in public places, a lot of people ask us, are we okay? Because the accent kind of makes you sound a little bit depressed and a little frustrated.
I know that, yeah.
Now, the young man in itself, he's probably making close to $50, $80 million a year. Do you realize what kind of money that is? The kid is set for life.
And there's no amount of money that you can put on being enslaved to a lunch bucket. And everywhere you go, people go, ooh, Harry Potter. See, as a gay man, as a gay journalist, that's you know, you have to understand that I'm gay. And when I go out into the world,
what has that got to do? I understand the point you're making, if you don't mind me interrupting, Chris, that this young man, Daniel Radcliffe, no amount of money buys your freedom. I get it. No amount of money buys your creative happiness. I understand that. Although what Chris is saying, with $50 million, I don't know how much the kid makes, but let's say he's making $5, $10 million a picture over 10 years. Yeah, that's over $100 million. He can do anything he wants with that money. He can go anywhere he wants. He can start a business, employ people, do what have you, okay?
Right, so why is he pulling it out and waving it in the breeze? Why?
We don't know that he did that, and that's the thing that I think I'm glad Chris brought up. You're getting something secondhand.
But as a gay man and as a gay journalist, I've got to investigate that. And that's what you guys don't get.
Also, on another subject here, you got to think, not only is the kid making money from movies, he's got, of course, you said the action figures and everything, which all that comes into play. But you got to think, sir, when this young man started making movies when he was, what, seven, eight years old with the Harry Potter films, his parents had to take care of the contract. His parents were contractually obligated to work with him and take care of him.
You don't understand.
Now,
as a gay, this is what I say. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. As a gay man and as a gay journalist, I understand that kid might not have gotten cut in on the back end money. He might not be getting any merchandise money. I'm gay. You don't want me saying that I'm gay, but I had to bring that up. Otherwise, you wouldn't know whether he's getting that money or not.
Otherwise, he wouldn't know whether the kid's getting merchandise money if you didn't say you were gay.
Yes.
All right, we got to take a break, Chris. Thank you very much. Our number, 877-876-PHIL, talking to Doug Danger about the allegations of last night's Harry Potter premiere in London, Daniel Radcliffe exposing himself and expressing frustration at having been tied to this rotten film franchise for 10 years. It is an incredible tale. It has not yet been verified or confirmed. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
How many times do I gotta say I'm gay?
Phil Henry.
As a gay man, as a gay journalist.
All right, why? We're with Doug Danger as we continue talking here in this last segment about Daniel Radcliffe so frustrated last night at the Harry Potter premiere in London that he pulled his penis out. And you had here, Doug, I know, this example. This is from last night's press interview with Dan Radcliffe.
You know, 10 years is a long time to spend with one character, so I'm kind of ready to move on, you know.
See, Brett?
right there, Phil, and I'm saying that... What are you saying? I'm saying that Harry Potter and that Daniel Radcliffe kid, how much money do you think he made?
I think we figured out he made $170 million over the 10 years.
In salary, yeah. But he's in a country where the tax rate can get as high as 80, 90%, right? So let's say this kid was able to take home $30 million over the last 10 years.
Well, he must have had an agent that was going to...
Oh, he must have had an agent, huh? I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. That's why I say that I'm gay, because you aren't asking these questions and your audience isn't asking these questions. How much of the back-end money did Daniel Radcliffe get? Did he get merchandise money? Is he getting a piece of the DVD? Is he getting a piece of the movie?
I would have to imagine that a kid that successful, somebody's got a lawyer or an agent's going to get a hold of him and say, you know, let's make some money here.
After the fact, but if he signed a 10-year deal up front, a 10-mil, whatever the hell it is, a 10-year or 10-picture deal, there ain't a lawyer, there ain't an agent. I don't care if Jesus comes down off the cross. You ain't going to get any more money out of that studio. And I'll bet you anything, Daniel Radcliffe took a look at his paycheck over the last 10 years, where the company's making $1 billion on that movie, and he takes home $30 million. Sounds like a lot of money, but it ain't a lot of money when you're taking it up to you-know-what. I'd pull it out, too, and wave it around. And I'm gay.
Well, you don't know...
No, and neither do you, Phil.
All right, neither do I. But the fact is that this kid made some money. If he got frustrated, if he doesn't have a good agent, if he doesn't have a good lawyer, if his parents are idiots, I guess I'd be frustrated, too. Here is Keith in Abilene, Texas. Keith, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Doug Danger. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question for Mr. Danger. Are you saying this information... Yeah, can you... Hello?
I heard you. Now I hear you good.
Okay, I'm sorry. I got a question for Mr. Doug Danger, right?
Yes, sir. My name's Doug Danger. Yes, sir.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm good.
Is this news all over the internet?
I don't know. I got the word from my guy in London. He said this kid Radcliffe went off, might have pulled it out, might have unzipped and waved it around. I have not had independent confirmation of this.
So okay, there's no other confirmation.
No other confirmation, no.
Well, my question to you is that you played a segment on something he said, and you didn't let it finish out, and it's like you fabricating your own story at the end of what he said. You fabricating.
I'll play it again. I'll play the tape again, and hear what it.
I don't want to hear it again. I heard what it said. But what I'm saying is that you played it to a certain point, and you made it seem as though the way you expounded on it is true. But it's not all over the... You know, news like that, you pull this thing out, it'll be all over the internet, all over the papers, everywhere.
Well, maybe, but they also... You know, these studios, they know how to hush stuff up. They know how to shut stuff up. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. That's how I found out. Now, let's listen. Let's see where it is that I...
You know, 10 years is a long time to spend with one character, so I'm kind of ready to move on, you know.
You know, because I hate doing the movie. That's basically what he was saying.
You know, I think you're fabricating this story, you know, because...
No, you didn't say that.
Why do you say I'm fabricating it?
Mr. Danger, listen, I'm a straight man and a straight journalist, okay? And I stand ready to... get information from wherever source I need to find out if these stories are true. If you're a gay man and a gay journalist, you don't have the facts that this occurred. So,
you're blowing it, man. You're blowing it. I'm on top of a big story. You're blowing it. Maybe you're just upset with me that you don't have the story and I do.
Yeah, but you don't have any confirmation. You can't go and say for a fact that this is what happened. You're just spreading a stupid rumor. And then by virtue of spreading the rumor, you're saying Daniel Radcliffe is being gay bullied.
You and I just figured out. Let me talk to this gentleman here, Keith.
It's a fabricated story, you know, just so you can promote that you're a gay man and a gay journalist. I'm a straight man and a straight journalist, and I stand ready to find out all the information available, and I can guarantee you this information is not available. It's fabricated.
Well, I don't know who your sources are, because I got a lot of good people telling me that this kid basically said, this kid said he's taking it up the hind end on the merchandise and back end money and everything, and as far as he's concerned, everybody can shake hands with this, and then he turned around and walked in.
What's this shake hands with it?
That's what I would say. I mean, I don't know what he said. But I'm a gay man and a gay journalist.
Can you play a segment of that?
Play the segment.
You know, 10 years is a long time to spend with one character, so I'm kind of ready to move on.
And shake hands with this. That's what he said.
No, he didn't, because you cut it off.
Can you play a segment of this being all over the news? Can you play a segment of that?
Okay, here it is.
You know, 10 years is...
No, not that. Where's the other one that you were going to play? You had another one. Okay, here it is. Here it is. Wait a minute. What?
10 years is a long time to spend with one character, so I'm not feeling too sort of bereft at the moment. I'm kind of ready to move on. You know, on the last day, there were lots of crying, lots of tears, but generally speaking, I've been able to cope not too bad.
There you go.
No. Can you play a news segment that this occurred with this guy at this thing? Can you play a news segment?
You
like
mean
a big
kid
story? Big story.
Of a guy saying, "Hey, good evening, Daniel Radcliffe pulled it out." No man alive could do that. If you want me to play a segment of someone coming on, like I don't know.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
You know, 10 years is a long time to spend.
Well, to tell you the truth, I don't think that it's
the veterans have put their lives at risk.
Hey, this is Charles Barkley. I'm a dumbass.
And that's just the way it is.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, where truth is our bitch and where we take it through the looking glass and beyond, going places other talk shows wish they could but cannot. You know the thing that's frustrating about what I just said? There ain't a cat out there listening to this show that does a talk show that doesn't believe what I just said. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL is the number, and our online presence at philhendryshow.com, where you can look at a live streaming video of the show right now. You can listen to live streaming audio of the show right now. There was a guy that, I should tell this story, remind me to tell the story next hour of the dude that wanted to listen but not watch the live show. And just, Jason, make a note of that, or Bud, Robert, one of you guys, so I can tell the story. It's nuts. If you go over to our website, though, you can look at live streaming audio, look at live streaming video, hear a live streaming audio, and also get access to our archives, philhendryshow.com. Let's see now. This hour, we're going to be on with Margaret Gray. Do we have her? Okay. We're going to get over, but I want to read the story first because it has to do with pets. And we love our dogs and cats, and we love our birds, and some of us love our snakes and our lizards, and, you know, that's just the way it is, man. There are critters. Charlie the Yorkshire Terrier won't have to pack up his doggy bag now that a court has overturned a Queens condo's ban on pets. That is a Queens, New York ban on pets in the condominium. The ruling means mail carrier Donata Foreman won't have to give up the 4-pound puppy who has been her lone companion since her last dog died in 2006. She said, quote, "I needed someone with me, but they didn't want to hear it. I said, I'm going to go all the way with this case. I need him because he's part of my family." Appellate division judges this week rejected a 2009 ruling by the Queens Supreme Court Justice Howard Lane, who found the Village View Condominium Board had the authority to ban pets. Queens Supreme Court Justice. I didn't know they had a Supreme Court in Queens. On the line with us, Margaret Gray from the nationally syndicated column A Little Bird Told Me. This is about pets, Margaret, and it's about a homeowners association banning a pet if the animal is, that's the rule, you know.
Well, you know, Phil, the rule is the rule. I understand that, and it is something that I respect because you have to understand, I am not really big on homeowners associations. I don't live anywhere where we have a homeowners association. I wouldn't live anywhere where there's a homeowners association because I think every person is entitled to make decisions based upon their own needs and their own taste for their home. I do think that a neighborhood should be kept a certain way. But when I heard that this Queens Homeowners Association had been overturned, I really had to say something, and that's when I got on the phone today with this Justice Howard Lake, who had ruled in favor of these people.
All right, so you're opposed to this woman. This woman said that...
Absolutely, yes.
All right, she said she wanted to be able to keep her dog, even though the condominium... Are you opposed to this woman because she obviously moved into the condo, she knew what the rules were, and now she wants to change the rules?
No, I don't really get involved in... I'm not getting emotionally involved in some homeowners association as Frank likes to say, a peeing match. Only he uses the stronger word. I'm not interested in that. I am interested in being able to have a home and, yes, a neighborhood where you have pets, and they are pets. They don't run the building. They don't run the other neighbors. That's what I'm afraid of here. And when you hear of a person who has gone to court, oh, my God, and they've hired a lawyer, and they have done the paperwork, and they have gone. Some of these people go further, Phil, for an animal than they ever would for a human being. And you hear about them interfering with the lives of other people, and you just shake your head. So that's why I got on the phone with Howard Lane, to lend whatever I could.
All right, so you feel that some of these people have got very weird habits with their animals.
Oh, absolutely. And we had this here. And I was going to tell you, in fact, Phil, if you wanted me to tell you now or later.
No, I want to hear the story. Now, you are a Dog Whisperer fan.
Well, let me, first of all, explain to you what happened. I don't know if any of your people listening to your program right now watch the Dog Whisperer. His program, in my opinion, is a gift. It is the greatest single program on how to handle dogs that I have ever seen. Anyone that doesn't watch this program, if they're aware that it exists, and they do own dogs, I don't know what their problem is. I'll just say that. The Dog Whisperer has made it very clear that when you take a dog out for a walk and you allow the animal to walk in front of you, again, when you take an animal out for a walk, a dog, and you allow the animal to walk in front of you, on the leash, you are sending the message to that animal that he is the pack leader, you're not. See, it's all about leading the pack, Phil.
And yeah, I know. I've watched him, and he says his little thing is, be your own pack leader.
Well, you don't have a dog, though, right?
No, I do not.
All right. Well, you've watched him, but I want to be the one that talks about how well I know him. Not him, but I know his work, because I have a dog, and just let...
All right, go ahead. So you're...
So what I'm saying is, when we went out into our neighborhood 2-3 years ago, Frank, and myself and my son, Jason J. Delmonico, we were really shocked to see so many people walking their dogs and the dog out in front of them. And I stood there and I looked at that and I remember saying to Frank, my God, look at that. They're letting the animal be the pack leader. And I remember, Frank, you remember what you said, Frank?
It was a damn shame.
Right, it was a damn shame. And Jason said, I said, look at the animal now leading them. So we decided as a family, because we don't have a homeowners association, that we would say something. And I have found that you have to be very, very forceful. So we saw that, and I remember thinking, my God, what's going on? What are we coming to? I was very, very disoriented. Here's a man walking down the street and the dog leading him. And you think you're in some perverse world, the island of Dr. Moreau. You don't know where you are. So,
Margaret, you're saying that you had this reaction just because you saw a guy walking a dog and the dog was in front of him. And, I mean, isn't that the way most people walk dogs?
I don't care what most people do. I've never, you know, a little something about Margaret Gray. I don't care what most people do. That makes me different from a lot of people. I go my own way. I march to the beat of my own drummer. So what most people do, as you say, It doesn't interest me. I am my own person.
All right, no, I understand that, and I didn't mean to say, but isn't that, when you look at that, don't you see a lot of people doing that?
You do. It is destructive to the animal, but more importantly, far more importantly, it's destructive to the human being.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. We're talking to Margaret Gray about her neighborhood, where the people were walking their dogs and the dogs were leading, as opposed to what, Margaret?
Well, the dog whisper is very clear. The dog should be at your side or behind you. You lead the pack. Isn't that beautiful? And people that let the dog lead them are clueless. They degrade other humans. They degrade what is known as the pack. So what we did as a family, and it was, it became something that I wanted to press this home. When I saw anyone walking a dog in our neighborhood and the dog was out front of them, I would say, get back in your house. My God, learn something about walking a dog. And of course they look at you funny, but they understand and they turn and they go back into their home.
You're telling me that when you yell at someone and say, get back in your house, my God, what are you doing? They do that.
They do, because I think a lot of people instinctively know that it looks asinine. I mean, you look asinine walking a dog and the dog leading you. The second time we saw it, we would walk over and do what we called an intervention, a confrontation intervention, and basically say, do you know how asinine you look? And they say, well, what do you mean? I said, dogs are to be at your side or behind you. You are the pack leader. And then I would give them a brochure on the dog whisper. And then finally, if they did it again, it's very radical, and we've been involved in some legal disputes, I'll walk over with a pair of scissors and cut that leash and just let the animal run. And
well, the animal's not, you cut, so in other words, what you're doing, Margaret, is you're intervening and you're cutting the leash, and you're going to have a dog loose in the neighborhood. You've got an angry dog owner.
Well, the dogs don't automatically run away, Phil. They stay, they look confused because the leash is cut. And so they look back to see where the human that they own is. But many of them do run away, and that's when we've been involved in some legal disputes. And I have said to the Humane Society, I said, you people are good at going out with a butterfly net and catching dogs, but do you know anything about the dog whisperer and the pack and the leader of the pack? And they look at you as if you landed from another planet. That's how clueless they are. So what we're doing, Phil, is we're reminding everyone that if you're walking down the street and the dog is out in front of you, you look ridiculous. You look like a complete and utter idiot because the dog is having to tell you where to go.
And I don't think, and forgive me for saying this, I don't think human beings are that familiar with the dog whisperer's ideas. And I don't. When I see a person walking a dog and the dog is out front, like the other day I saw a guy. He was on a skateboard, and he had his dog on a leash, and the dog was very healthy dog, and the dog was pulling him.
Absolutely asinine. What a ridiculous thing you just said. What?
No, but I mean...
No, don't go any further. What you just said is the most asinine thing I've ever heard in my life. Do you know how that man has degraded himself and other humans?
Well, what I'm saying is he's getting his dog some exercise, which is what you want to do for a dog. Doesn't the dog whisperer say that?
Yes, the dog whisperer does say that, but the dog whisperer doesn't say go get your dog exercise at the expense of the human race, at the expense of the dignity of the human race. That's what he doesn't say, Phil.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. With me is Margaret Gray, who has taken a radical step in her neighborhood when she sees people walking dogs who are out in front of the human being. And apparently that is not the way you're supposed to walk a dog. That means the dog is leading the pack. She has gone over and had verbal confrontations, what she calls interventions with them, even going so far as to cutting the leash with a pair of scissors. I don't know if that's going to do any good. Margaret Gray is a big fan of the dog whisperer, who claims that walking a dog with the animal in front of you gives the animal the idea he's running the pack. 877-876-PHIL. Does it make any difference to you at all? Do you feel degraded by a dog that you're walking that's in front of you? 877-876-PHIL. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
I'd appreciate if you would laugh, please.
I apologize.
You just degrade human beings.
Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Margaret Gray joining us as we talk about... We actually started talking about a condominium association that was forced to alter their rules, Margaret, and allow an animal to live in the condominium complex, even though they did not allow dogs because this lady wanted to have a dog there.
Well, and I think it's very unfortunate. If a condominium association has a rule and they enforce that rule... And the court of the state of New York, in this case, comes to them and says, well, you know something, let's alter the way you do things because a woman doesn't know how to relate to human beings.
That's kind of unfair.
No, I don't think it's unfair at all. Did you read the story?
Well, she's a letter carrier. She's 52 years of age. She says that...
Let me read the quote to you, Phil. She said, I needed someone with me. I needed someone with me. It's a dog, for God's sake, Phil. I love dogs. But this is what comes when we allow dogs to run us. And the dog whisperer says you have to be your own pack leader. Now, when you're walking your dog and the dog is leading you by about 10 or 15 yards, it's sniffing things, it's crawling up the legs of other people, it's basically doing whatever it wants to do. That's because the dog believes that he is the master of the house, not you. You're an idiot. And I say that, Phil, I know how funny that sounds, but the dog thinks that you're an idiot.
And the dog thinks I'm an idiot. The dog knows that I'm the guy that it has to go to for food.
The dog is telling you to get the food. The dog is telling you, open the door, I'm going outside, I have to go to the bathroom. Now, I'm saying that we have to get our dignity back as human beings. You don't let a dog walk out in front of you, and you don't overturn a condominium association's ban because some woman who's a letter carrier in Queens is so weird.
So weird what?
Well, she talks about the dog. I need someone.
Oh. All right, 877-876-PHIL is our number. You were also talking about dogs, walking dogs in front of you, walking dogs behind you. Here is Raymond on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Raymond. You're on with Margaret Gray.
Hey, how you doing today? I just have to disagree with you. I think if a dog pulls, it's not a bad thing. You were just saying that if the dog is in front of you, you're not in charge of it. And your dog whisperer, have you ever seen the show The Dog Whisperer? You talk so much about him.
Yes, I have.
Okay.
And he said when the dog walks in front of you, you are sending the signal that the animal is the pack leader.
Okay, so let me interrupt you.
So you put the dog behind you or to your side, and you don't put a hat on it or shades.
All right, the hat and the shades is...
You've seen the episode where the dog whisperer has a leash with a dog pulling him on roller skates. He does that several times. He has roller blades,
That's because he already knows how to deal with a dog.
Oh, okay. So it's okay for him to do it, but no one else?
Yeah. Well, absolutely, because he knows what he's doing.
Police dogs? What about police dogs when they find a scent and they chase a bad guy down? Are you supposed to...
If you want to learn more about it, watch the Dog Whisperer and he'll tell you.
Okay.
But the question is...
I'm talking about walking a dog. This guy's talking about looking for cadavers. Slightly different. You don't take a dog out for a walk looking for a dead body.
I'm not talking about dead bodies.
And the dog whisperer is walking out in front of other people when they're talking about that.
So the dog whisperer doesn't rollerblade the dog?
No, I'm talking about the dog whisperer.
Wait. You guys are talking on top of each other. This man's question is a very good question. What about when the dog whisperer is rollerblading?
Phil, I answered the question. The dog whisperer knows what he's doing. He knows how to... The average person, like this gentleman, with all due respect, has to work up to that. and then the dog knows that there's a human in charge. But if you or I or Eric allow the dog to, you know, go out in front of us, the dog thinks we're idiots. And
so
the dog
okay
will think Eric's an idiot.
No one else.
Because he's trained, because he has the knowledge. I'm sure you understand that the dog whisperer is, well, I'm very sorry, sir, that someone knows more about dogs than you, but he does.
Well, I just think you contradicted yourself. It's not okay for anyone but him. Too bad for the world.
It is, because he is a trained dog whisperer. That's why they call him that.
Well, wait. Hold on for a minute. Is he? What are you telling me, Margaret?
I'm saying that when the dog whisperer says to us, don't let the dog walk in front of you, he's saying just that. Now, because he has a dog pulling him, that's because he has an understanding with that dog. Okay? I was so happy to help you. Thank you so very much. Have a very pleasant morning.
You too.
I don't think we're done. Eric, thank you very much, buddy. 877-876-PHIL. I don't think that you were quite fair with that man.
How was I not fair?
I think he asked a very good question. When the dog whisperer has...
I said the dog whisperer has an understanding with that dog.
Well, how come he has an understanding and nobody else does?
Well, I guess that dog doesn't know anyone else but the cattle. The dog whisperer, Phil, is obviously skilled at what he's doing. He knows. Don't question the dog whisperer. I'm telling you, have you seen the dog whisperer?
I've seen the show, yeah.
No, have you seen the dog whisperer? Have you seen him in your neighborhood?
No, I... Why?
Well, until you've seen him in person, you don't know. You just don't know.
All right, we'll be back. Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
God. Phil Hendry.
God. Grow up.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line, Margaret Gray, the author of the weekly newspaper column, A Little Bird Told Me, and the story of a condominium association in New York being ordered, in essence, Margaret, huh? Ordered by the Supreme Court of New York to allow dogs. And I don't know that I've heard of any condominium association, homeowners association, being forced to allow dogs. You feel this is an example of human beings not taking control of their dogs, huh?
Well, Phil, I brought up the dog whisperer as an example because the dog whisperer has taught us, if you've watched his program, that you never, ever let a dog walk in front of you. Never do you ever let a dog walk in front of you unless you are absolutely proficient and well-trained in the handling of animals. The dog whisperer is. The gentleman that I talked to in the last half hour, Phil, who said that he saw the dog whisperer roller skating and having the dogs pull him, obviously those animals are not, those animals are not leading so much as they are doing a job. That's not taking a walk. That's not like a cadaver dog that's out sniffing for a dead corpse. And the fact that I had to explain that really is frustrating. Now, what I wanted to say was this. Now, we have a beautiful animal. We call him Shining Example. He's a little chihuahua mix. We take him with us when we are out walking. We have him at our side. We do not have him out front. And when we see people walking with their dogs out way in front, Shining Example will walk beside us, and we'll say to those people, would you please watch how our animal behaves, because you are really degrading the entire human race with what you're doing. And it is a little frustrating.
I can't believe that you're going to talk to total strangers. You know,
these are people from our neighborhood.
Yeah, but they may be people from your neighborhood, but I can't believe you're going to walk up to total strangers and say, would you please watch my dog? Because you are degrading the human race.
Well, Phil, that's exactly what is happening.
Well, how is it degrading the human race? I mean...
Well, if you let a dog lead you, you are saying to the dog, basically, I know I'm human, but I'm so stupid, you have to lead the pack. That degrades all of us, Phil, not just that one dog owner, but every human being that's ever held a leash, and even those of us who haven't.
So you walk up to someone that's walking their dog with this animal that you call shining example.
It is a dog. It's not an animal. It's a dog.
All right. I mean, I didn't want to give it any more due. So,
I'm trying to be adult. And this is, I'm not trying to make jokes.
No, I'm not trying to make jokes either, Ms. Gray. But what I'm hearing you say, you walk up to these people and you say, would you please watch what my dog is doing? Because you are degrading the human race.
No, I did not say it that dramatically. Not at all.
Well, then how did... If I'm putting it wrong, how did you say it?
If Frank and I, or Jason J. Delmonico, or any one of us is out walking, shining example, and we see someone from the neighborhood walking the dog, and the animal is out in front of that person, we will walk up next to them with shining example at our side, and we will say... This is the proper way to walk a dog when you are the leader of your house pack. Now, would you please get it under control? Because for every one of you that degrades the human race, almost back to the jungle, there are 10 or 15 of us that are affected. So please, please.
And boy, that is, like, really dramatic, and I think overdrawn.
Well, no, it is not dramatic.
Oh, come on. You are degrading the human race almost back to the jungle. And why the jungle?
Well, why the jungle? If the dog's leading us, then we're nothing more than chimpanzees. So we are in the jungle. We're apes. And that is a dog.
All right, 877-876, and this is all based on the dog whisperer.
No, I learned an awful lot from the dog whisperer, absolutely, but I've learned a lot myself. Don't think the dog whisperer is all that. He's taught me some things, sure.
877-876-PHIL. I'm going to go to a phone call here. Here is Steve in Petaluma, California, listening on KNEW. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, Phil.
Yes.
I think that postal worker in the condo facility, if she wants a dog, it's fine. As long as she picks up after it, takes care of it. It's not like it's a chimp that's going to eat her face off.
Steve, there's no laughter, so you might as well keep going.
What does that mean?
Well, he was waiting for the applause on the chimp line.
No,
it felt pretty flat, Steve.
Okay, fine. Let the gentleman finish.
Okay, and I have to say it is a privilege to talk to this leash Nazi. That he's such a control freak. I think it. Last time I checked.
Well, no, I just know about dogs. I know about dogs. I know how to walk a dog and not have the dog walk you, unless that's what you like. You know.
Well, it's a free country, and if you want your dog on extra long leash, that's why they make these things, lady. You just totally lost the concept of having a pleasurable walk with your dog.
Well, you've lost the concept of how to treat a dog. How to walk a dog and not have the dog look at you like you're stupid. If that's what you want, then be
exactly.
My guest.
I think you're off your OCD meds.
Do you want your dog to think you're stupid?
What do you mean the dog is going to think you're stupid? You know,
if the dog is walking out in front of you, the dog believes he's the pet. Oh my God. I've been through this a million times.
All right, so the dog's out in front of us, and he thinks he's the pack leader. What's going to happen?
Then you'll never be able to train the animal. He'll bite people. He'll do what he wants because he runs the pack. Oh, God. Now, Steve, as far as chimps go, you know what those things do, right?
Yeah.
Okay, they do tear your face off. Are you?
Yeah, but this lady doesn't want a chimp. All she wants is a dog to be a companion.
Well, I say give her a chimp, and then she'll know. Then she'll know.
All right, thank you very much, Steve. 877-876-PHIL, World Famous Phil Hendry Show. What do you mean, give her a chimp?
I think a lot of these people that have these dogs, and they treat them as if they're human, and all of this marvelous thing... I think what they need is one good afternoon with a chimpanzee. I think they need, literally, Phil.
Why would you wish violence on people that don't walk a dog according
to... Listen to what I'm saying, Phil. I think a lot of these people that think they know dogs, they need a nice long afternoon trying to lip lock a chimp. Good night.
No, whoa, hold on for a second, okay? Because what you've just said, what you've just basically said is you have threatened...
I know what I said. I threatened violence against people that walk dogs with the dog on a mile-long leash, yes. I'm sick of it. I think those people need to spend a pleasant afternoon on a chaise lounge making out with a chimp while another chimp is jealous and is one, it's on its way over.
Is on its way over?
Yes.
From where?
From his chimp house. I don't know from where.
All right. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Wayne. Go ahead.
Yes. First, I was going to ask you what kind of dogs you raised, but you said you have a chihuahua?
I have a mixed breed chihuahua, yes.
All right. Just to let you know where I come from, my parents used to raise wolf cross, okay? And you keep referring to a pack.
Yeah.
The other members of the pack are supposed to be out front to watch for all kinds of things. When I take my dog for a walk, I don't have him on a leash at all.
Well, that's wrong.
And I've been alerted to snakes from it.
The dog is now looking at you as if you don't know what you're doing.
No.
So the dog feels he has...
Because that means that you don't know the history of domestic animals, do you? You don't know how men...
I certainly do. Yeah. The dog began following man and began eating from man's garbage dump. Mostly females.
No.
That's exactly how...
They learned that if they worked together with man... That they would both be provided
really?
A meal.
I see, ma'am. So what did they do? Did they go to college?
I understand.
Did they get a degree?
Well, why are you being smart?
This man doesn't know what he's talking about. The way the dogs were domesticated was that they were wolves. They ate from the garbage of human hunter-gatherers. They began hanging around human beings. This man thinks that we got together at a night class someplace. And started tearing apart engines. Well, what are you saying, sir? Please.
For one thing, I believe the conversation started with a condominium allowing a person to have a dog or not.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
What you're trying to get across is that the dog whisperer and you know so much about dogs, and from what I've heard, you sound more like a snotty little woman with a damn pet chihuahua. Which is a worthless dog. It has no use.
The dog whisperer has told us, the dog whisperer made a lot of money from people like you
that believe him.
He explained
but you have
to
no
all
true
of
experience
us
with dogs besides a little chihuahua named Precious.
Your dogs are degrading you, sir. Every day you get out of bed, your dogs laugh at you.
That you do not
They laugh at him. What do you mean?
This man doesn't know anything about dogs. All he knows about dogs is what he picked up at the, I don't know, where, at the pound? I don't know what you know. I know about dogs because I saw dogs walking in front of people.
You saw dogs? Do you know everything?
Can I ask you something? Why do dogs pee on people? Because they don't have any respect. That's why.
No, it's because they're marking their territory. See, you don't know anything about animals.
Marking their territory... No, they're not.
Hey, man.
Why do they pee on anything besides the grass? Because they haven't been taught respect and decency.
Respect and decency. Respect and decency.
Oh, look who we're hearing from, the host of the show. Isn't this great for you to come in, Phil, and help bail me out?
No, I'm listening to you having a conversation here with a man. Respect and decency?
That's exactly
right.
A dog. Oh, you don't know anything about it. You don't know anything. Is it really? I thought it was a cat. Thank you.
Ma'am.
I know it's a dog. I know it's a dog. And I'm saying, if you... You know what? I'll tell you this much, Wayne.
I don't wish this on you, but you may be one of those people that needs to make out with a chimp.
Whoa. Oh, God.
What are you laughing at?
What is it with you making out with a chimp?
I beg your pardon.
That's what you just said to that man.
Well, this man knows very little about animals, and maybe he needs to learn the hard way.
Oh, French come on now.
Don't you think? French kissing a chimp.
What? Learn what the hard way,
jealous chimp, well, a more jealous chimp is driving by and looking out the driver's side window.
All right, I think somebody's losing their mind. Wayne, thank you so much for your call. 877-876-PHIL. We're going to go to Gracie here on the Phil Hendry Show.
Well, I don't like to be condescended to.
Well, if you're joking around, let us know. Gracie, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Margaret Gray.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm very good, ma'am.
The lady on the phone, I don't know your name, ma'am, but
My name is Margaret Gray.
Margaret Gray.
Yes.
You don't have any common sense at all.
What do you mean
by that? I was
going
to talk to you, but I'm just listening to the crap that's coming out of your mouth.
Dog Whisperer. Do you watch The Dog Whisperer?
No, I don't watch The Dog Whisperer, but I have common sense.
Well, I think common sense does not hold with dogs. You don't treat a dog like a human being. Most people do. The Dog Whisperer tells us that to have a dog walk in front of you means the dog is the leader of the pack. You let it be a dog, you don't treat it as a human, you don't feed it table scraps, etc. Now, many people, and I'm not saying you, many people shouldn't start with a dog. They should start with a very jealous and angry chimpanzee.
All right, will you stop with that, please? You know the people have been very badly injured with chimpanzees. I see no point in you using that as a joke. Go ahead, Gracie.
I can't talk to this lady because she don't have no common sense. She don't know what she's talking about. She's going off
common
bits and pieces she heard on the dog.
At least I'm going by someone that knows something.
He's marking his territory. It's just stupid.
Where do you let the dog walk when you walk him? Is he out in front of you?
I don't walk a dog.
What?
I don't have a dog.
Well, then you don't know. You don't know your ass from 40 cents a week about dogs.
Are you serious, lady?
I gotta hang up. This woman is calling and telling me about dog, and you don't even own a dog.
I don't need to own a dog to know that you're stupid.
Next week, Gracie's going to be on and tell us what it's like to walk on the moon, even though she's never even flown in an airplane. Thank you, Gracie.
All you're doing is talking about the Dog Whisperer. He's getting paid off of. You buying his books, you watching his show,
he's
doing whatever he wants to do. And you're going by everything he says.
He's rehabilitating dogs. He's not beating them like you.
He's rehabilitating
dogs. Watch.
Yeah, he rehabilitates dogs who have been mishandled by women like you.
Okay, let's watch that. You don't have any idea of who it is you're talking to or about. And I don't want to hear any more of that chimp stuff.
Well, I don't want to hear it either, but some people would do very well indeed to sit down and just give a little peck on the cheek to a real angry, pissed off, jealous male chimp.
I'll talk to you later.
She's sick. She's sick. Thank you very much. 877. That's it. There's only so much of that crap. Then what does she want? She's back on.
I have never been talked to.
Goodbye. I hung up on you. Let the record show, okay? Lip lock a very angry, mad male chimp. 877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
I've never been so humiliated.
Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Margaret Gray on the line with us as we finish up this discussion of a homeowners association in New York that said they don't allow dogs, but the Supreme Court of New York, I believe it's the Supreme Court of New York or the Supreme Court of Queens. I didn't know that the borough had a Supreme Court. Anyway, they said that and I know I'm sounding stupid here. I forgive me, folks, but I'm just going by a story here in the USA Today, which is not a very good newspaper, said that the woman could have a dog. And we're on the line with Margaret here taking your calls. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. It's the appellate court of New York that overturned somebody here. Margaret, you wanted to make one point?
Well, the point that I want to make, Phil, is when I talk about the Dog Whisperer, I'm talking about Cesar Millan. He's a man that's worked with animals, and he has said, I train people, I rehabilitate dogs. That's a very profound thing to say. And many of the people that I've been talking to tonight, Phil, do you know who they think the Dog Whisperer is? Michael Vick.
Go. Go to a call.
Well, excuse me, but I'll do my show.
The timing was perfect on that.
Well, I don't understand.
I said Michael Vick, and you should have gone to a call because the timing would have been...
I'll go to the phone calls when I'm ready. 877-876-PHIL. Here is in Flagstaff, Arizona, Adam. Go ahead, Adam. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Margaret Gray.
How you doing, Margaret? My name's Adam. I'm a truck driver. I'm in Flagstaff. First of all, let me get to the point about the guy that called about the dog, the cadaver dog. He never mentioned a cadaver dog. You did. He was referring to, if you want to let him finish, he was referring to a dog that is following a scent, following a suspect. Of course, he's got to be out in front of the officer. And just because the dog's out in front of you doesn't mean that he thinks you're stupid, because dogs don't think anyway. Otherwise, they wouldn't run out in front of cars and get run over. Another thing.
The man was referring to a dog that was hunting a dead body that was on the run. Is that what you're saying?
You're the one that brought up the cadaver dog. He did it. He said the dog has to be in front of the officer if he's following a scent, looking for a suspect.
Of course. What I was saying was, when you're walking the dog, big difference. Yeah.
Okay, let me tell you something else. Dogs are not smarter than humans. But I'm telling you, I've seen plenty of truck drivers with dogs at the truck stop. When that truck's going to leave, believe me, the dog knows the truck's going to leave, they're going to jump in the truck because they want to be with their master. They're not going to go running all over the truck stop until the guy got to chase them down. When the truck's going to leave, the dog knows who's the boss. Believe me. I think you're taking...
Yeah, and you know why?
You should have brought your medication to work with you, or you should have doubled up on your dose before you got there. Because if you're watching the dog, then you don't know nothing about dogs. You got to own a dog to know about a dog.
The Dog Whisperer knows more about dogs than any human being I've ever met.
Let's leave him out of it, because this is not about him.
That's what you keep referring to. Would you please listen? Without the Dog Whisperer, Adam, we're chimp bait. You know that as well as I do.
If dogs were so smart, they wouldn't run out in front of cars and get run over, first of all.
Human beings get run over by cars. Oh.
Big deal.
Oh.
Phil Hendry.
Without the Dog Whisperer, we're nothing more than chimp meat.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
The United States has always considered waterboarding torture, except
for... And it's all right to talk to the kids.
I think that's great, and there are a couple of appliances that I could use.
I wrote the book because I felt that some people were being demonized.
This is racist, man. Angry guy. Angry.
Fire.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Boy, I can just tell I'm going to get pissed off this hour, man.
Why?
Because they got this waterboarding thing isn't going to end, and now we got some jackass by the name of this Nadler. He's a representative who is looking to fill the shoes of Grayson, I guess. Grayson's, was the official pain in the ass in Congress. And the thing that bothers me about this is that this becomes ideologic, man. It becomes partisan. What are they talking about, you know? The Bush administration's Justice Department advised him, and the Obama administration Justice Department declined to prosecute Nadler. Don't rub it in, man, okay? Anyway, 877-876-PHIL.
Oh, you can say go Nadler, yeah.
Right. Go Nadler, my guy, 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show on the line here with me, or in studio, rather, is Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman in our news hour. Now then, today is Veterans Day, and I don't know. I was just saying to Rance and the guys, I said, you know, I just like to know the story about things. I think it comes in handy so that we can say, aha, this is why this is and thus and so. And so it makes a little bit of sense. But I don't know if you know that today, being Veterans Day, it began life as Armistice Day.
What's that?
Armistice Day was the last day of World War One. A long time ago, World War One started in 1914. It was one of, well, it until World War II, it was the single most devastating, unbelievably bloodletting war the world had ever seen. It was a horror. It was a horror for every man, woman, and child that went through it. World War One was even more, in many ways, violent and brutal than World War II because they were using poison gas. There was not the surgical techniques and the repairing of wounded men as we had after World War II. So a great many maimed, terribly maimed and injured men came out of World War One. The Canadians especially. You know, the United States didn't get into World War One until 1917, I believe, 1917, 1918. The Canadian Army was in World War One from the beginning, and the Canadian Army fought a lot of battles and won a lot of battles and really took the fight to the what were called in those days the Central Powers, which was Austria-Hungary, Germany, the Ottoman Empire of Turkey. Those were the three entities that we were fighting in World War One.
What do you mean an Ottoman Empire? What's that about?
That's what today is Iraq and Syria, and there used to be an empire. Or as our good friend Osama bin Laden called it, a caliphate.
Yeah, it was like official Muslim?
That was the official Muslim empire, yeah, and that was the caliphate. And that was what Osama bin Laden was bemoaning after 9/11. He said, we haven't had a Muslim caliphate since 1924, I think was the year he put on it. Well, actually what happened to Turkey in World War One is that their empire was destroyed. I guess it was officially declared dead in 1924. All that was left was Turkey. But at one time, Turkey controlled all of the Middle East, and it in and of itself was sort of a throwback to the days that the Muslims and the Christians did battle over Central Europe and the Holy Land. So wild things, man, really weird, wild stuff got put to rest after World War One. And so Armistice Day came on the 11th of November, 1918. That didn't end the death caused by World War One because there was immediately after that or concurrent with that an influenza epidemic.
Yeah, people got flu.
Yeah.
Well, what's bad about that?
In a time when we didn't have antiviral drugs back in 1918, so Spanish influenza killed 20 million people.
Man, no. You think about the Black Death.
No, I'm not, man. No, I'm not. 20 million people.
What? That's more than the black bubonic or the bubonic death did.
No, it's about the same. Only this was global. The bubonic plague took out 20 million just in Europe alone, I think. But I got to get my numbers right. But the fact is, World War One was horrific, and Armistice Day was and is November the 11th. But in Canada, by the way, they call it Remembrance Day. You know, the Canadians have been in both world wars, but World War One, man, it was an ass kicker, and Canada was, I think, personally, Canada had probably more to do with the ultimate victorious outcome of that war than the United States. We had a lot to do with it. I mean, when we sent in all those troops and basically just, you know, turned the tide against the Germans and the Austrians, but Canada, man, was going to bat for a lot of years and a lot of people died. There are war memorials in Europe and in Canada to the fallen Canadians in World War One. So anyway, when I was a kid, they still called it Armistice Day.
How long ago was that?
Oh, thousands of years, bud. Okay.
Yeah, it must have been a long time.
Yeah, thousands of years ago. When I was a kid, you know.
Well, I mean, what are we talking about?
In the 60s, they would say Armistice Day is the... And I think what happened was there's a whole generation of people going, well, what does that mean, Armistice Day? You mean World War One? They go, yeah. So I believe, and if I'm not mistaken, maybe Ranch, you can look this up, because these two idiots sitting here...
I got other things I gotta do.
Yeah, you do other things, man. I think they changed it to Veterans Day sometime in my lifetime. And so Veterans Day is to honor those veterans who are with us, and Memorial Day is to honor those who have fallen. And in Canada, they call it Remembrance Day, and I don't know what it represents in Canada. I'm sure it a little bit of both. Given the numbers that died, especially World War One. But in New York today, there were 20,000 veterans that were marching in the streets of New York, and they had 600,000 people on hand to cheer them, which is quite an impressive, I think that's an impressive turnout for a Veterans Day. And I don't know if they had a Veterans Day parade last year and what the turnout was. It seems to me that this year there's something in the air. I don't know what it is, but the American people this year have turned out in droves to say, you know, how much we appreciate our veterans. 600,000 people in New York, and there were a lot of veterans who were in the parade, and there were a lot of veterans who were just kind of watching the parade go by. Here's the New York Daily News speaking to veterans who attended the Veterans Day Parade in New York today.
Well, just the fact that the veterans are here and the military folks are here and the civilians are here to support us, that is enough to make me, you know, happy and be proud that I'm in the military.
I'm proud of being one because this is what gave my family when we first came to the United States. I was the first one to go into service, and it really helped my whole family by being a veteran.
As I was in the Army Reserves, I used to be, and I'm here to support the troops, those who didn't come home, those who are home, those who've changed, and it made a big impact on me, and I just wanted to show my support.
Here is John Liu, a New York City comptroller, honoring our veterans in an interview with the Daily News.
The veterans have put their lives at risk in defense of our way of life, American ideals of freedom and democracy. And it's one day a year that is Veterans Day, but all throughout the year, we honor them for what they do to protect us here in America and abroad.
So there is the Veterans Day thing that was happening in New York. And like I said, that's a lot of folks, man. I mean, they get a million people for some of those ticker tape jobs they have. But, you know,
I mean, just with people hanging out, you know.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if they were just hanging out.
Yeah. What do you mean? They just happen to be on the street and they say, hey, look, there's a parade.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
how many people on any given day are on in New York?
What?
How many people, if you just said stop and you counted all the people on the sidewalk, how many would it be there?
If I just said stop to everybody in New York?
Yeah, you like froze them. If you froze them up.
I don't know. There wouldn't be 600,000 crammed along. I don't think there'd be 600,000.
No, we know those 600,000, man.
Yeah, there would. There's like 8 million people would live there.
You're talking about in what? No, man. What we're talking about here is a group of people, 600,000 people on Fifth Avenue, Jack. Okay, that's what you got to ask.
What?
You got to ask how many people, if you froze everybody on Fifth Avenue, how many would there be?
Yeah, there probably wouldn't even be more than like 1,000 or something.
Are you out of your mind, man? If I froze everybody on Fifth Avenue, there'd be 100, 200,000.
No, you're just saying that, man, because when he said that number, that
let me see this thing. If you freeze everybody on Fifth Avenue, there's not going to be 600,000 people. The point is, that's where the parade was. That's where the 600,000 people were.
Who said there was 600,000? Was it Glenn Beck?
Yeah, that's right. Glenn Beck counted them. No, he didn't, man. It was some the cats that organized the parade. I don't know. Why would they lie? All right, 877-876-PHIL. And then one more thing, the debate over Glee anti-bullying episode. That's right. There's a debate. Was it good? Was it bad? Is it right? Is it wrong? In the episode, there is a gay student who has been bullied, and the teacher says to him, stand up for yourself. And so when this young man is bullied by a football player who slams him into a locker, he chases the perpetrator into the locker room, they argue, they confront, and then guess what? The guy that was bullying him kisses him. So what we have here is an example of what the writers feel is behind a lot of gay bullying, and that is some closeted homosexuality among the people that do the bullying. That was the point. Now, one of the people that criticized this was some critic on the Huffington Post, Leah Anthony, you know, she's got like three names because she hates her husband. I'm kidding. Leah Anthony Labresco. And she said, well, you know, he was bullied and then they're telling him to stand up for himself and refuse to be a victim. Well, I don't think that's right. And this and that and this and that. She thinks that if a kid stands up for himself, he's going to wind up getting his ass beat because in bad school districts, she said, and the kids watch Glee, and they stand up for themselves, they might take a shank. I disagree. I think if you're being bullied by someone, and there isn't anyone around to help you, you should learn how to kick somebody's ass right up through their shoulders. How do you feel about that? What do you think about that there, Leah Anthony Labresco? If there's no adult around, there's no cop around, and you're cornered, what do you want them to do? I think they ought to get together and learn how to take a baseball bat and park it in someone's head. How about that? In bad neighborhoods, what are you talking about, lady? In a bad neighborhood, there ain't going to be a cop for miles to help that kid.
Yeah, but she's saying a kid fights back and gets ass kicked.
What is a kid in a so-called bad school district, according to this jive-ass, lily-white bitch that writes for the Huffington freaking Post, what is a gay kid in a district like that supposed to do? She says, run away. Uh-huh. There's one thing you teach a kid, how to defend themselves. Because if we've got classic examples of adults in these school districts, they don't know how to protect these children at all. And now we got this dumbass writing for the Huffington Post, and she says, run away. Well, that's going to help a lot. So that's what I'm thinking. Jillian Mapes of Billboard Magazine thought it was a great episode for a show that premiered with the premise of speaking for those who feel like high school outsiders through contemporary hits and Broadway classics. Speaking out against bullying seems sincere and appropriate. Last night's Glee was a social commentary on relevant issues. Word. And Lisa Respers France of CNN, with the hyphenated name and all of that, she said, what? 877-876-PHIL. An attorney says a coach whipped students who misbehaved. And Amazon.com pulls a pedophile's guidebook when they find out that members of their executive board have been reading it on their lunch break. I'm kidding about that, but let's find out. The Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We look at ratings, and I think that when you hear that a show is rated number one or a show is rated number two, that's all you need, and that's probably all you need. But wouldn't you like to know what it means? I mean, we are forever on this radio show trying to explain to you what it means when a show is number 1, 2, 3, 4, 800. The TV ratings from last night, wait a second, man. What night is this?
Thursday.
Is this Thursday night? Yeah. The TV ratings from last night, Wednesday night, actually we're now into Friday morning, but you know what I mean, are as follows. In the 8 a.m. hour, 8 p.m. hour, forgive me, the 8 p.m. hour, the 44th annual CMA Country Music Awards show had 16.4 million viewers, 9.7, 16 household. Now, forget about what I just said to you, but what I'm basically saying is the following thing. 9.7% of the households is what it had. Now, if you ask me, well, what does that mean, Phil, in relation to other households and other things that have been, you know, in the grand scheme? All right. The 44th annual Country Music Awards had 9.7 of the households watching television last night, right? Well, by way of comparison, the series finale for MASH had 60% of the households in America. Now, that's one holy hell of a lot of households, isn't it? In point of fact, the number one show of all time that was watched was last year's Super Bowl, New Orleans versus the Indianapolis Colts, 105 million households. They do not have the percentage of households, but they do have a share of 68%. Which means it was probably somewhere lower than MASH. Maybe it was around 58% of the households. But the fact is, this was the most households watching, but it was a lower percentage of available. The point I'm making here is that 9.7, it ain't squat.
Yeah, but it's pretty good compared to everything else.
Compared to what? It just so happens that last night at 8 o'clock at night, ABC was offering the one thing that people were interested in, which was the Country Music Awards, but they only had 9.7% of the households. They didn't have no 60% like MASH had. All right. In the 9 o'clock hour, ABC, the CMA Awards. And guess what? They actually went up. The number went up. They had 10% of all the households, but still well below the biggest shows in the history of man on this planet. The 45th most watched show of all time, just to give an example, were the New York Giants versus the New England Patriots Super Bowl. 43% of all American households. So even the 45th most watched show is far and away higher than any crap that was on TV last night. Excuse me for saying that.
Well, man, you make it sound like it's all garbage because it don't come up near the what the other shows are.
Well, it's not garbage, but I'm just saying to you, man, it's not, you know, they ain't doing no big number. Finally, 10 o'clock hour, ABC won the night because guess what? The 10 o'clock hour, Country Music Awards again. And they dropped down to 9.6 households, the percentage of the households, but still much, 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 much lower than the big, big numbers that have been achieved in recent years by the big-ass TV programs. What do we mean by the big ones? Well, Super Bowls are generally among the most watched. There's a note here that says the final episode of, actually not the final episode of Dallas, the Who Done It and Who Shot JR. Those of us who were active in the 80s watching TV, sitting on our dead asses and staring at the TV set like me. MASH, Roots. This was the miniseries in the 70s that was wildly popular. Gone with the Wind, an actual telecast of Gone with the Wind in 1975 and 1976. Kicked some serious ass, man. But this was long before cable TV had taken over and you could go to pay-per-view and watch Gone with the Wind until the cows came home. The Bob Hope Christmas Special in 1970, the 15th highest rated show of all time.
What? Who, I don't understand. You never have Bob Hope get not that many people now.
Because they didn't have cable, man.
They didn't have cable. They didn't have all the shows that they got now.
They had way fewer shows, okay? So there wasn't a whole lot to pick from. So if you're sitting there and you're watching TV in 1970, and it's either Bob Hope or something else, well... So they made their choice, but they, you know, I'm not going to be flipping over to ID, man, and checking out to see, you know, part 16 on Ted Bundy.
Oh, you said that's what you see?
What?
You go look at Ted Bundy instead of the Bob Hope.
Yeah, yes, I would. Yeah.
Wow.
What do you mean, wow?
Well, that's a...
What do you mean, wow? Yes, I would. I would watch a Ted Bundy special before I watch Bob Hope, not because I don't like Bob Hope, but I've seen about 9 million Bob Hope Christmas specials, and I don't need to see no more Bob Hope, okay?
Yeah, but I mean, a Ted Bundy, I don't know, man, that's bad.
What are you shaking your heads for, okay? Take it easy. What are you all depressed?
It just seems bad. Why is it, dude?
Look at this guy's bawling.
I don't blame him.
Oh, what a couple of babies. Are you serious?
Why would you do it?
Look at this guy. Because I'm watching Ted Bundy. You guys are putting me on.
No, we're not, man. It doesn't seem right.
Well, guess what, Charlie? That's my taste in TV. I got nothing against Bob Hope. I just happen to want to watch Ted Bundy instead. All right. And that let that be on my grave. Let that be my epitaph. I got nothing against Bob Hope. I just want to watch Ted Bundy instead. Phil Hendry. World famous Phil Hendry show. That pedophile book on Amazon. I finally took it off of Amazon. Like, okay. And then we'll move on real fast from that.
Phil Hendry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Experts fear copycat suicides after bullying cases. I just wanted to make this just as an addendum to the story on Glee. These so-called experts fear, quote, copycat suicides. All right. I wish that they were a little more responsible. The way they report these things, any kid that kills himself, kills him or herself, his or herself. This is a very serious and very tragic occurrence. The underlying depressions and situations that led into this need to be looked at, and we need to prevent it at other kids, you know. To call it a copycat because one kid killed himself and so let's all go kill ourselves sounds pretty stupid to me, but hey. The experts call it contagion when a suicide or rash of suicides inspires other to follow in an attempt at martyrdom or solidarity in death. Well, you got to be a pretty depressed young person to kill yourself, even if you, quote, think it's in solidarity. I don't buy that for a minute.
Maybe you're depressed and you see someone else and you decide, I have to kill myself. You know, last night I was saying to the my pre-show audience in the 9 o'clock hour, because we do a 4 hour show here on our video. We do 1 hour before the show and then we do 3 hours of the radio show. But I read at night to fall asleep, as many of us do. And I get off the air at 1 a.m. Pacific time. I'm generally not asleep until 5 a.m., 4:30, something like that. I do a lot of reading, and I came across something from the magazine O, Oprah Winfrey.
What are you reading that for?
Because it was something I was looking for, man, okay? It was something that came up, and that was what was linked.
Yeah, well, you're not going to find, you know, reading that on a regular basis?
What do you guys care whether I'm reading Oprah's magazine or not?
Yeah, but she's, that's for women.
Will you guys shut up? No, it ain't just for if I find something interesting. It just so happens in that magazine was an article written by a woman named Susan Klebold. She was the mother of Dylan Klebold, one of the two kids that the two terrorists, that's exactly what I call what happened at Columbine, one of the two perpetrating terrorists at Columbine, Eric Harris being the other one. And I read this woman's story, and I got to tell you, it was heartrending, and I felt for her, and she did not try to evade responsibility one iota. She talked about how everything that she believed in this world just was ruined. It was wrecked forever. She had to start all over again. She thought she, in one pretty, it was a pretty heart-tugging section. She said, I thought that if I loved anybody the way I loved my son Dylan, that nothing bad like this could possibly ever happen or ever be perpetrated by anyone that I gave that kind of love to. And she said, I found out different. And so I began questioning everything I knew about God, about man, about family, about everything. And she said that, this was a very unique situation for that woman and for the Harrises and for, you know, Susan Klebold's husband, because not only had they lost their sons, but their sons had been responsible for the murder of other people's sons and daughters. The entire community was like up in arms against them. So they had no one, man. They had no one. And I'm not, you know, making any excuses. But when it came to grieving and feeling bad, you go to the back of the line, Klebolds and Harrises, because nobody wants to know from you. OK, no one gives a crap about what you're going through, because look at what your kids did. And they understood that. And when I was reading this article by Susan Klebold, she got it. She wasn't complaining about it. She wasn't pointing a finger and saying, you know, these people are unfair. She understood. She said, this is what happened. I mean, we had only ourselves, and we couldn't do anything. She said, but I had to figure out something. I had to do something. I had to find out what I could do, you know. And this is when it got into a part of the article where I have to say that I thought she was off track, because she said,
I thought you were going to say how bitching she was. Now you're going to complain about it?
Shut up, man.
I'm not. What are you talking about, bud?
Well, you can't say about all the bad things she done, and then, or not what she done, but and then criticize what she doing about it.
I'm not saying it's not a criticism, man. You know,
why don't you shut up, man, and let him finish?
I'm gonna, but you're saying good stuff.
I'm gonna say good stuff, man. Okay, do you mind me, you know, finishing? I'm saying all the stuff I just said was good stuff. I'm just saying what she said was this. She wanted to look into, she felt the solution to the problem and the thing that she wanted to get into and really dig into and figure out the answer to, because once she did that, you know, was suicide prevention.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's wrong, man. I think that's wrong. I think she's wrong. I think she's off base. I'm not criticizing her. I'm probably, that was in 2009. This is 2010. Maybe she's changed. But, you know, that's squirrely to me, because a kid kills himself or herself as the result of other stuff.
Yeah, but if she's going to prevent the suicide, she's going to look into what's causing it.
Okay, well, then you don't say it's suicide prevention, man. You find out what's wrong with the kid. Is the kid schizophrenic? Is the kid depressed? Is the kid manic depression? That's what you're looking at. You're looking at adolescent manic depression or adolescent schizophrenia or something like that, okay? What do you mean suicide prevention? What's that got? I mean, yeah, you're going to prevent suicide, but forget about that.
Yeah, well, that's the only thing that you know about.
The reason why she focused on that was because when the
the journals of those two kids, that Harris and Klebold, they published their journals. And Dylan Klebold talked a lot about suicide, talked a lot about killing himself, talked a lot about being depressed. And so his mother read that and thought, wow, I should look into suicide prevention. And what she, I believe, should be looking into is this kid was borderline psychotic, man. If he wasn't fully psychotic, I mean, he was delusional. The other kid, that Eric Harris kid, there's only one thing you could do with that kid.
What do you do with that guy?
There's only one thing they could have done with that Eric Harris kid. Put him in a cage. I'm serious, too. I'm being very serious now. Put him in a cage, and you say to him, Eric, we know what you want to do. We know what you're planning. You are not going to be allowed to do it. You're not going to be allowed to plan any of that stuff. In fact, you're not going to be allowed out of this cage until you learn that in this society, as much as you hate everybody and everything, you're not allowed to do the stuff that you were contemplating. Otherwise, you stay in that cage. That's the only thing you could have done with that guy.
You would never got away with that, man. That's against the law for sure.
I understand that, but that would have been the only way to prevent what that kid was going to do.
Well, I mean, they could have... What if they found out the plans and everything?
Well, that's what I'm saying, man. They would have found out the plans, what this kid was going to do. But that kid was such a psychopath, that Harris kid. He wanted to kill, man. He didn't care who he was going to kill. And what they wanted to do was blow that whole school to hell, man. That thing was a terrorist act. That's what they were doing. School shooting my ass. Those guys wanted to blow that school right off the foundations. And when the bombs didn't go off, that's when they went in with the guns. But when you talk about these suicide, why are kids killing themselves? Because they're sick in the head, man.
Yeah, but that lady, at least she's trying to keep a kid from doing it.
Bud, you know, quit being so, like, defending people and everything, man. I'm not attacking her.
Yeah, he's just worried, you know, because that lady lost a kid and everything.
I understand that, man. I'm not saying that Susan Klebold is some bad person. I'm just saying she's got it wrong, man. That's all I'm saying, okay? Video shows basketball coach whipping players. Now, this is going to solve teenage suicide. Beat them with a 5-pound weightlifting belt. All right. Attorney says video shows basketball coach whipping players. Does the video show it? Maybe. Do we have the audio? You bet. Would we play it for you? Of course we would. And we're going to play it for you right now. This is a school in Jackson, Mississippi. Some parents of Murrah High School basketball players have filed a lawsuit against Coach Marlon Dorsey, who they said whipped their sons with a 5-pound weightlifting belt. Jason Hubbard said he reported Dorsey to Jackson Public Schools for whipping his son as a punishment for not performing plays properly. He and another family are suing Dorsey, along with Murrah High School and the school district. In a written statement, Dorsey apologized to Murrah High School, its parents, and the school district. That ain't going to help. He's still getting sued because there's a payday coming. I shouldn't say that. Anyway, let's listen now, folks, shall we? By the way, is this wrong of me to play this tape?
Why?
Because it's going to be the tape of a coach beating kids.
Well, what are you saying?
Should I play it? You're going to be hearing a coach whipping kids. Are the people that are going to listen to this, are they going to get their kicks? Are you guys going to get your kicks? Am I going to get my kicks? Is this pornography? You decide. A six-second cell phone video allegedly showing Coach Marlon Dorsey striking a bent-over basketball player with his pants down around his... No, I'm kidding. A bent-over basketball player 3 times with a 5-pound weightlifting belt for messing up. Wait a minute, man. Was that 3?
Man, that the first one, man, sounded like it hit him with a barbell.
Let's listen to this. A 6-second cell phone video allegedly showing how many times? Striking him 3 times. Yes, here it is. Wow. God. That's 3, man. And you're going to hear the guy that's making the movie laughing. Attorney Lisa Ross represents some of the parents suing the school over the whipping incident. She spoke to CNN about the big payday she's going to get the lawsuit.
We believe it's illegal and it was unlawful for the coach to hit these students. In this particular case, the students had engaged in no misconduct.
No, it ain't a man.
They had done absolutely nothing wrong except run a basketball play incorrectly. And we believe that it's unlawful for any teacher to hit a student merely because the student ran a play wrong.
Is that a man?
No, that ain't a man. Lisa Ross.
Sound like a man.
It ain't no man, okay?
Anyway, did you hear what she said? Not really. Okay, Jason Hubbard's son alleges that he was whipped by the coach. Hubbard also spoke to CNN saying that if students wanted to play on the basketball team, they would have to put up with the whippings.
The fear of not playing was very disturbing. They had the trust in the coach. And when having that trust went a little bit too far with the kids, putting fear into them. And for them to take abuse like that, I thought was very unfair. But the conversation that we had with him, he confessed that the whippings did hurt, and he only took them because he had to take them to play.
All right, and finally, here is local television in Jackson, Mississippi, WAPT-TV, speaking with parents for their reactions to the whippings.
And it's all right to talk to the kids for us, you know, when they're doing something wrong, but I don't think it's right for anybody to put hands on somebody else's child.
People look to the coach for help, you know, with their children. You know, if something went on, they say, well, I'm going to tell your coach, you know. They tell your coach, the coach gets you in line. That's how it was back in the day. But like I said, he wasn't doing number time, you know, tighten them up.
He don't need to lose his job, you know. Maybe this incident will teach him more on how to handle the situation than paling the situation.
That's a, it's heavy. All right, so there's that guy, and he was beating the crap out of people, and I guess that's just the way it goes.
And I'm like, oh, snap.
So that is that, and other news ahead. Are we taking a break? Yeah, we'll take a break. Amazon no longer selling that guide for pedophiles. Author defends pedophilia. This is the most vile story. I don't even want to do this story. But they've taken the pedophilia book off of Amazon.com, and the fact that people are buying it. Forget about Amazon.com. Who the hell's buying it? We'll be back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And I'm like, oh, snap.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
All right, this pedophile book, which I don't want to hear anything more about, it has been pulled off of Amazon. I don't know why Amazon might have taken it off, or the author, who is a very, very, very sick man. I don't know if he has a criminal record. I suspect that he does not, because he's out there talking about committing or making the commission of a criminal act, to wit, child abuse, easier. And he even goes so far as to say that it can be pleasurable for the child. So this is a terribly demented man. And he gets to walk around and talk this crap because, well, there's people out there denying the Holocaust ever took place. So, you know. But the book is off of Amazon.com. Now, as of today, this book, I am told, I'm not even going to give you the name of it. This book was outselling four books on the New York Times bestseller list, The Lost Symbol by Dan Brown, The Grand Design by Stephen Hawking, and Big Short by Michael Lewis, and oh yeah, The Partner by John Grisham. So what does that tell us? Now, there's people maybe buying it out of curiosity, maybe, I don't know why, but this book was outselling these four books. I don't know where those four books were on the New York Times bestseller list. But allegedly, they were on it yesterday, and that book was outselling John Stinkin' Grisham. Man, you got that right. I don't know what that means. I don't know whether it's being people collect this stuff. Here it is, a pedophile book, man. You know, we better buy it because it's going to be rare. I don't know why people buy it, but I got nothing more to say about that, other than to say that this is a. This is a guy not unlike a Holocaust denier, not unlike, I don't know, you name it. You name it. These people that post bomb-making instructions on the internet. You know, I personally think that, he's more dangerous, but the people that are 9/11 truthers, I think you people are right in line with a guy like this, because you're not about truth. You're not about helping to heal or helping to make things better. You're about lying so that you can keep your little game going. Well, this scumbag is about his own kind of criminal mind, you know. He's into his own deceptions. That's what all of these people are about.
They're about manipulating life, manipulating facts, manipulating you know, the facts of life so that everything comes out the way they want it to. So that George Bush caused 9/11, so that no Jews were gassed, and so that, you know, molesting a child, it feels good for the kid. Criminals and the depraved who are not yet in a jail cell, for them, it's a game. And what they do is they attempt to manipulate life and fact and reality and somehow get us to doubt what we see as decent. Somehow get us to think, I don't know, maybe the moon is made out of green cheese. I mean, it stands to reason. One of the arguments they use, as a matter of fact, and this is the most dangerous statement you're ever going to hear from somebody. Here it is. You ready? When someone says, I mean, it doesn't make sense. When someone says that, or they say it stands to reason, or they say, well, anyone would tell you. No, that's not a proof of anything. That is somebody getting lazy. That's somebody saying, I don't want to investigate the facts, but I mean, after all, it would stand to reason that a child involved in a situation like that, right? And so they sell it. And after a while, they sell it to enough people where we have to sit here and talk about this garbage like it's a legitimate conversation to have, which, of course, it isn't. But they don't stop trying, do they? They don't stop trying, man. They will keep on trying. They'll always stick their faces up there every now and again to see, how many people can we bullcrap today? So they stick their little 9/11 truth argument. They put the little Holocaust denial thing going up there. You know, who shot JFK? And, pedophiles, maybe they aren't so bad. And the NAMBLA thing. These animals are people who are trying to change the moral code, if you will. They're trying to change the basic genetic code, if there is one, on morality. They're trying to get it to shift just a little bit so their particular perversion is accepted. Even if it's changing history. So, you know,
I don't know what you said, but
it was pretty good.
Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate that. And that's all we have for tonight, I think. Well, we got a couple of more things here. Did we talk about those guys getting their asses kicked from that coach?
Yeah, but it wasn't all that interesting.
No, it wasn't. It was boring. Boring as hell. We've got a couple of other stories here. A father suing a school district for reading about the school district reading aloud about slavery. He's black, his daughter's black, and he says that Black History Month reading has racially harassed his daughter.
I don't understand that.
No, I don't blame you for not understanding that.
What's that mean?
The father of a black student has sued a Detroit area middle school, Detroit area school district, claiming that his daughter was racially harassed by a fifth grade teacher reading aloud from a children's book about slavery. The suit claims Jala Petrie's teacher at Margaret Black Elementary School in Sterling Heights read excerpts from Julius Lester's From Slave Ship to Freedom Road that contain racial epithets and racist characterizations, according to the Macomb Daily. The suit against Warren Consolidated Schools was filed November the 3rd in Macomb County Circuit Court in Mount Clemens, according to court records. It was filed by her father, Jamie Petrie, and seeks more than $50,000 in damages. District spokesperson Bob Freehand told the Associated Press that on Wednesday the school district hadn't been served. The reading was from supplemental material provided by a textbook. It was supposed to involve a positive discussion about the excerpts. But I guess the N-word was in there and maybe a couple of, other references. The lawyer Scott Combs, who represents the family, told the Detroit News that letters and calls to the district failed to remedy the family's concerns. Yeah, sure. All right, so no more of that zippity-doo-dah. Do you understand, man?
I like it.
Right. Phil Hendry's show produced by Jason Rantz. Technical director is Charles Wagon. Associate producer, Dan Northcraft. Phil Hendry's show. com.
Phil Hendry.